will be at the Beach Hut at Venetian Shores Park in Lindenhurst. Roulette presents the Vision Festival with inner city migrations, positive knowledge, grassroots, and more. 6 p.m. On your billboard for Monday, June 17th, Hypnotic Brass Ensemble will be at the Highline Ballroom in Manhattan, 9 p.m. Looking ahead to Wednesday, June 19th, the B-52s and the Go-Go's will be at the Roseland Ballroom.
From Manhattan to Montauk, Bridgeport to Amagansett, if your favorite band is there, you'll find it here on the Concert Billboard on WUSB Stony Brook.
And you are listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook. The time is 6 o'clock. Time for Off the Wall.
Thank you.
And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening. Joined tonight by Kyle.
Hi there, Emmanuel.
How are you?
I'm good. I see you have a show to do here.
I have a show. Wait a minute. Hold on a second. Is this the same problem again? Say something. Go ahead. Just say anything.
Anything.
Yeah, you're coming through the left channel only again. All right. We know what the problem is this time. It's this stupid connection we've got. Just keep talking, and I'll try to improve it by sticking my thumb in here.
I see you have a show to do here tonight. You know, if you cooperate with
okay,
me...
Okay, I'm not... You can be quiet now because your audio sounds good. I realize that's a contradiction in terms, but yes, it's fine. Everything's perfect. So let's just not move an inch, and I think we'll get through this hour. Listeners, that goes for you, too. Please don't move. Your movements cause our signal to bounce off things it's not supposed to bounce off of, and then we get interference. All right, good. Everyone's in place. Put a smile on your faces, people. Come on. This is supposed to be fun. All right. Hey, riots in Brazil. Do you see that? No one's talking about it here, but they're having riots down there because they raised the bus fare 9 cents.
I can help you with this show, but you have to help me.
Okay, fine. Come be part of the show, but just don't flail about. That's all.
All right.
All right. Fair enough.
Riots in Brazil.
Yeah, because they raised the bus fare 9. It doesn't take much. 9 cents. That's all it took. Of course, there are other issues, such as spending all the money on the Olympics and the World Cup while people starve and have no homes and things like that. It could be said of almost any country that that happens to a degree, but having a lot of this happen at once is, I think, more than most people can take. So, yeah, riots. And I just got this news release from the LA Times saying that to counter this, a number of cities in Brazil announced reductions in public bus fares. You know, it's like they just don't get it. It's not, it's really not the 9 cents. It's not lowering the fare that's going to stop the anger. But it'll be fun to see people take advantage of better deals on the bus.
Yeah, I haven't read much about this, but I did see a clip, and it was pretty amazing, the riding that they were doing. It reminded me a lot of what was going on in BC during the Winter Games. You heard a lot more, especially locally, just about the impact the Olympic Committee has, mm-hmm. and how economies are affected or stimulated or whatnot. There was a lot of stuff going on with indigenous peoples and working the event.
In British Columbia, this happened.
Yes.
Amazing. So it's not just countries far away. It's right here at home.
Absolutely.
Of course, when it happens in the United States, it doesn't really happen as much. We're very timid. We're so timid, in fact.
Yeah, I don't remember the riots in Atlanta.
I'm not saying we have to have riots, but we do have to have a voice. We do have to speak loudly, and we have to not back down when we're threatened with all kinds of crap that people have no business threatening us with. Whether that goes for surveillance or police intimidation tactics or just unreasonable rules that we're expected to follow, such as standing in a free speech zone, which is a little box.
Right.
Things like that.
Whether temporary or permanent,
mm-hmm.
whatever the case is.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I was amazed. I saw the pictures. It's just huge amounts of people, like crazy,
mm-hmm.
over something simple, but it becomes a catalyst. Saw the same thing in Turkey over different issues. But
Because there are lots of other issues that that people aren't addressing, and you could say the same thing of any country, and yes, including ours. A lot of homelessness, a lot of people losing their homes because of bank misbehavior. All kinds of injustices that follow us around every single day, and this feeling of helplessness. Except in our case, our feeling of helplessness it links to a feeling of, well, why bother doing anything? Whereas in other places, it links to a feeling of, well, I'm mad as hell and I'm going to start showing it.
Yes.
The thing is, too, you have these riots in various places like Turkey, you have all kinds of things in Greece, you have, you know, in France, they had riots because. This was a couple of years ago. They were going to raise the retirement age 5 years in the future. Something like that was able to set off tens of thousands of people in the streets because they take issues very seriously. And, it's good to see people react, even if you don't agree with what they're reacting to. It's just good to see expression. And we need to do that more. We need to express ourselves more and not worry so much about the what-ifs, you know, what's the reaction going to be. Also, in our country, I think all the guns might make people a little bit queasy, too, as far as feeling that the authorities might be afraid of you because you could potentially could be armed and maybe
right,
your
becomes,
fellow demonstrators might be. And we have to let go of that.
Becomes an excuse and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
I completely agree that a lot of people, and it's that fear that leads to inaction. But it's when fearless, when people are creative, it doesn't have to be a riot. When people are creative and they resist and they get together and they really make the premise of their point heard, and really fight. And it you must be fearless in any sort of action or any sort of thought or like discussion. You got to be fearless if you're afraid to share even in a discussion that eliminates the possibility of other people hearing your ideas. But man, one of the pictures I saw a guy just charging. I mean, many people, but you know, the front lines of these protests just charging at police, like just running right at them, like absolutely abject fearlessness.
Right. And that's something that doesn't happen in this country. We talked about the guy who was walking backwards in Times Square with a knife and got shot dead by the cops. And people say, yeah, they should have killed him twice and things like that. And overseas, because obviously the guy wasn't charging the cops with a lethal weapon, a machine gun or something like that. There wasn't the kind of reaction that we'd be expecting here. But also, the reactions here, for whatever reason, even completely unarmed people, are just way over the top. And we accept that. And we shouldn't accept it. We shouldn't accept that we have the equivalent of soldiers in our streets that boss us around and intimidate us and make us feel like we're living under occupation. And it's not made any better by what we've been hearing over the past couple of weeks as far as surveillance and our privacy just being erased, whether it's through tech companies or governments. And people being okay with that because we're so cynical, we believe that that's the only way to maintain a society. It's not. And to be honest, I'd take my chances with terrorists rather than see the freedoms this country was founded upon taken apart one by one. It's simply criminal what is happening. And what's even worse than what's happening is the reaction to it, which is simply not as strong as it needs to be. I think the majority of people, I can say that across all age lines and ethnic lines and things like that, majority of people say it's okay what they're doing. It's necessary.
And that if it doesn't bother you or if your inaction is okay, it's fine. You know, that's a choice you can make. But honestly, what are you teaching the next generation of people? And that's dangerous.
Yes.
When you have entire like huge groups of young people coming up and they see, older people kind of, leading by example. And if there's no example, really, it's sort of scary because you may one day be dependent on those younger people and their choices or their apathy could affect you.
Right, right. We just heard some pieces on Democracy Now! About Bradley Manning and Edward Snowden and people who have basically faced down the authorities and told the truth. That's basically what this is about, is telling the truth and being penalized for it. And if we don't care about that, if we're not willing to stand up and say, yeah, this is right, this needs to be protected, this kind of thing that we're learning needs to be encouraged because the things that we're learning are disturbing and it's not what what our country was founded upon. It's not what we should be supporting or funding or anything like that. And if we're not there to show that support, then every time somebody does tell the truth or does reveal something that's an injustice, they're going to pay the price. They're going to pay the price alone. And the next person is simply not going to do it. And you'll be living under tyranny before long. Now, interesting story, Kyle. Where did we go yesterday?
Where did we go?
Well, actually, it took us we went overnight starting Sunday. We went down to a place we've been to once before, Fort Meade, Maryland.
Yes, because it's a good place.
It's a nice place. It's not an okay place. But we didn't go to the same part of Fort Meade we went to last time. If you have a hacker calendar, and I assume all of our readers have hacker calendars. Yeah, I'm looking at you. I know who doesn't have them. Yeah, get your hacker calendar. It might be halfway through the year, but the pictures are what people get it for in the first place. And one of the pictures that is in the hacker calendar, all of which have to do with surveillance of one sort or another, because, hey, we saw this coming. One of the pictures was taken by Kyle on that previous visit. It's a picture of the NSA, the National Security Agency.
That That's amazing. How apropos.
Apropos indeed.
It's like foresight or something.
Yes. We went down to Fort Meade, Fort George Meade, actually. I think there's a middle initial, too, if you really want to be formal. And we, this is true of everybody who spies on other people. They don't like their pictures being taken. And they don't even like the pictures of their buildings being taken. So we had to be very, very careful. We couldn't take the picture from anywhere actually on the same landmass that they were on. We had to, where was that picture finally taken from? Across the street somewhere?
Yeah, so you can't be poking around with cameras, even on like auxiliary perimeter type roads that maybe lead to sort of public relations centers that are a part of the campus. You can't get enough time doing what you'd want to do before, you know, somebody that uses that road to patrol might come upon you. Which eventually did happen, but for our purposes, the best vantage point ended up being on the opposite side of a highway across the opposite direction. So I was, you know, six lanes over from the nearest fence, and it was right beside the very iconic black glass building there, and some of the other auxiliary buildings when you first go into the main parking lot there.
Was this when I faked having a flat tire or something? I pulled over and you got out?
Well, yeah, I think that you were concerned that we were having an air pressure problem.
I wasn't concerned at all, Kyle. I just wanted to pull over so that you would be able to take a picture.
And you said to me, I really am concerned. There's something blinking. I'm not familiar with this car.
No, I said that to Kyle of the past because I wanted you to believe me. Because if we did get interrogated, you had to pass a lie detector test. So that's why I told you that then. But I'm telling you, Kyle of the present right now, that was all a ruse.
Right. So we found a good spot, and I just, got out and photographed from across interstate or expressway, whatever, major road. Mm-hmm. That's a public thoroughfare, huge public thoroughfare. And I could get into the technical stuff about like the equipment I was using, but just basically took a nice, well composed photo from a nice safe distance, but got a pretty good amount of the buildings, and they're very famous buildings. And I don't know, I kind of liked the transit aspect too. It just looked busy, I guess, with the roadway there.
So. And that's the one that we wound up using?
Yeah, we went through a couple of those.
You took a lot of pictures. I mean, yeah. in various inconvenient states where we were passing by. We drove by a few times, and some of them, obviously, motion was obvious.
Yeah.
We went far away at one point. We could see a good part of the whole complex.
Right.
But that was the best one. And that shows up in the August picture of the 2013 hacker calendar, so it's coming up. We already went through Men with Hill in England, which we went through a similar escapade to take pictures. It was actually easier to go to a foreign country and take pictures of an intelligence agency or a bunch of antennas listening in because we were pretending we were taking pictures of sheep. That's how we got such a good picture there. But there are also other pictures that we haven't used that are really brilliant.
Yeah, we haven't published any of the other photos from either trip. But anybody who's done field production knows that just the travel and logistics alone are tricky. And then variables including weather and lighting and things like that. Those are all on your mind, and then composing it, and then external factors like security, if it is sort of an area like this that's contentious or just, you know, infamous, in other words.
It was contentious because they didn't see us taking pictures. Somehow they didn't see that because we did it well. We were off site when we took the pictures, didn't walk around with cameras swinging off of our necks or things like that, but they did see us driving around scoping out possible vantage points. And I think the thing that might have tipped them off that we were different was when we went to a parking lot, fairly empty parking lot, and walked in opposite directions from the point that we got out of the car. But it was, we got stopped by four different cops at the same time, which I think is most of the force. And yes. They just kept asking us the same questions over and over again. So you were driving down to Washington, D.C., and you decided to turn around and come here instead. It kept about 25 minutes of that.
Oh, man. It's like going into this, I was loathing, like, gosh, how many times am I going to have to explain how I know you, how we met? had. I mean, all this kind of stuff.
I still think we should come up with, you know, four times we tell the same story, and the fifth time we tell a radically different story.
Right.
Just to see what they say.
Well, we're space tourists. We had a great conversation on launch.
Uh-huh.
But we did some experimenting, and definitely had our fun sort of capturing that particular venue, ended up in the calendar. And, you know, some places we were pretty good. We were given the circumstance, and we were intentionally pokey in some places. And we, you know, we kind of feeling it out and getting comfortable. You got to do that with field production in any sense, you know, get your scene, get a sense of the people and what the area is like.
It's a process. You keep learning as you go along. You're never at the stage where you know it all.
Right. Because there are always unknowns. You just become progressively more relaxed with the occurring, and then be aware that there could be this and that and the other thing. So you're on your toes, but it's fun.
All of this was in our head as we were going down to Fort Meade again on Monday morning.
Yes.
This time, our intention was not to bother the people at the NSA at all.
Right. They were not the focal point of any of the video or filming.
No, this time, the ones in our crosshair. Well, that's probably the wrong way
Don't
to phrase
say
it.
That,
I'm sorry. It's just a coin. Why should they worry about two people? They're a huge. Anyway. There is not just the NSA in Fort Meade. There is also a military base right next door. How convenient.
Yeah.
And this is the place where Bradley Manning is having his court-martial. Now, I did not know this, but it is relatively simple to attend the court-martial. And I assume that if you could attend the court-martial, you would have to attend it via video link or something like that, because there's talk of trailers attached and things like that. But no, it's possible to simply go and attend in person.
I would like to say that is both good and bad in this
this
case.
Yes,
and we can speak to that later.
Speak of the good first.
It was really good to go and to meet other people that are regularly attending.
Mm-hmm.
For better or for worse, you figure out what kind of people they are. You know, maybe they've got all kinds of interests and crazy reasons for their passion, but passion notwithstanding, it's good to see what that is about and to see yourself as being a regular visitor, and to see the process, what it takes, because you can't record what it takes. You can't bring anything electronic. You can get onto the base. The base, it's a working base. It's very, very common. People live there. It's very common for visitors to come to the base.
It's like Stony Brook University, except 100% military.
Exactly.
Bigger, in fact.
And bigger, yeah.
There's that many people.
Yeah, and I've been to a couple of military bases. When I was in school, I had a friend who lived on base, and it's pretty normal to go through the checkpoints and visit and, you know, go to the base exchange and different things like that. So I was a bit familiar with that process. And to that end, it was sort of, easy. The navigation there is a little different. You really should have a map. If you're not familiar with this particular facility, it is huge, as you said, and it was very difficult at first to get our bearings and to find out exactly where we were going, because the map that we had was just sort of sparse and very hard to make out, because it was all satellite images. It wasn't like an illustrated map. But that notwithstanding, we definitely found our way. We actually asked at one point for some directions and got our way there. And then you go into the court area, and they're basically, it's in the back of the parking lot. They have like a bunch of gates set up, and go through all those processes. And that's cool to be able to see it and then come back and tell about it, because again, you can have a camera and, you know, your phone's in the car, but once you get to the court area, it's just like going into any federal or local courtroom. There are going to be metal detectors, all that. So
a little different.
Sure.
Well, we didn't walk through a metal detector. They waved us.
Yeah,
with the wand, yeah. But you can't even bring your cell phone into that building. They won't take it from you. You have to leave it in your car or someplace else.
Yes.
It's, to me, and this is going to sound bizarre, it was very much like going to North Korea.
That's true. I stand corrected. In the case of a cell phone, you could probably bring those to a regular federal court and whatnot, but in this case, yeah, any communication or recording devices was to be left in a car, and anything other than like ID and just general personal belongings were not allowed in your pocket.
And actually, I did bring my cell phone into North Korea, but they simply put it in a plastic bag until I left. And also, I was concerned about not wearing any provocative clothing, meaning things with slogans or anything on my T-shirts. You know, nothing revealing or anything like that. Once you did that, they basically let you into the court area. But before we did that, we drove onto the base. We didn't really know where we were supposed to go. Some people had given us directions, but I underestimated how huge the place was. So we were driving around for a good 20 minutes or so, not having any idea where we were, and without any kind of escort or anything, because when you're on the base, it's not necessary. So we're just seeing all these buildings. We're seeing a shopping center. There's a Burger King on campus, if you can believe that. And we had no idea where we were supposed to be. There wasn't really a map that spelled it out very well. We finally had to ask a couple of people. We asked one guy who I think was jogging, and he gave us directions. Then I saw a guy in full camouflage outfit walking up the street. I said, you know, this guy will probably know. And in full view of the guy who'd just given us directions, we asked directions again. And sure enough, they were in totally the opposite direction. So he looked a bit ashamed of himself. But we
that
wound up...
Make, no, I take issue with that statement. Just because he's in a military, that doesn't mean anything.
Well, he was the first person I had seen in camouflage. I didn't realize there were 20,000 more just wandering around.
We had lunch later, and we saw a lot of different uniforms.
Yeah, he was our first. That made him special.
People, one guy knows, one guy doesn't know. He could have been wearing a muumuu and a lei and, you know, may have known the directions.
But the one who was correct was the guy in camouflage.
Got it. Okay.
All right. So anyway... Not important. We still haven't gotten to the bad. You told the good about going to this. Let's back up a little bit. Before we actually went onto the base, we met up with some people who hold a vigil every Monday morning from the ungodly hour of 7 a.m. until 8:30. And we drove all night to do this because I think we both figured there's no way on earth, no matter where we are, we're going to make it on time, waking up and getting someplace at 7. So it's easier for us to simply stay up and drive down and be a little bit tired. And we just basically pulled a double day where we do 2 days and then we sleep for 16 hours afterwards. Doesn't work for a lot of people, but we somehow managed to make that work. But we showed up early in the morning and met with the people who were standing outside the main gate at Fort Meade.
Basically at a crosswalk on the corner there right before the entrance.
Really dangerous crosswalk.
Yes.
But we made it across.
Yes, only half of the intersection is actual crossing. They had banners and... It was really neat.
Really neat.
We talked to them. We asked them to get a little bit more details about the process of actually getting on base and then where to go thereafter. Spoke with them for a little bit. Asked if it was okay to record them.
Yes, yes.
Because we didn't know. We didn't know if we could photograph, if we could do things from the street level. What is the security thing kind of... What's going on really there? Mm-hmm. But it was really quite pleasant to meet them.
Explaining our world, explaining hackers, explaining radio, and sort of sharing what our concerns were, why we were all there. And they were very open to that, very nice people.
Yes.
So what's the negative then?
I would say that... So when we got into the courtroom, the very first thing they read sort of the minutes and assess what all's going on there that day, who's present, who isn't from various legal teams, stuff like that. And one of the things they do mention is the resources there. And now what I mean by that is how many people are in the courtroom. They say there are so and so many guests, blah, 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 blah.
Oh, I didn't hear that. They actually took a tally of how many people were there. Okay.
Yes. So they said there are 12 people present in the courtroom. And then they assess the annex and the other facilities they have set up officially for the court, as you said, the video link room, all that kind of stuff. And they really do have it set up. They've got a gate, they've got a security processing center, they've got like a team of like less than 10, maybe more than 10 security guys on various levels sort of doing different jobs to marshal everyone. They're prepared to have a lot of people there. They've got a spare room for overflow, And all the infrastructure you might see at a small concert or stuff, you know, those kind of gates and tents and stuff like that. They're ready. They've got restrooms out there, everything you'd need to host a lot of people. And one of the things they said is that there are 12 people here and there is actually more room in the courtroom. Mm-hmm. So we had not even filled up the courtroom for that morning, for that day. And I would say that is one of the negative things, and we can go into a lot of the details about how we felt and what's going on with the actual case and the trial and our experience there, but one of the things that immediately stood out was that there are not enough people there, and a lot of them are quite a bit older.
Yes.
I'm a bit amazed. I was probably the youngest person there.
I think you were the youngest person there. There are certainly not enough people under the age of 30. under the age of 40, even under the age of 50, who are there.
Yeah.
And it's great that they're there. Don't get us wrong. But where are the people in college? Where are even high school kids? Or just people in their 20s? Or just people in general? There should be so many. There should be lines. I know courtrooms are dull and boring. And military tribunals, which I guess is what this is, or court-martials or whatever, can also be boring. Although it's really fascinating. Even though I was up all night, I was kept awake by the fact that I'm seeing something I've never seen before in my life, a military courtroom. I mean, that's very, very different. There's so many things to talk about. Maybe we'll get into some of those.
We will.
But it's essential to show up, no matter how dull and boring it gets, to show support, to show interest, because that's the kind of thing that authorities take note of, that, wow, this case matters. And this case really does matter. The whole world is following the Bradley Manning case. The whole world is following that.
But from an armchair.
Exactly. Well, they can't get here. They're far away. The thing that maybe is preventing people from getting there is thinking that it's as hard as we thought it was.
Yes.
It's not hard. It's easy. I'm looking at the rules to get onto the base. And if you drive onto Fort Meade, all you have to do is drive on with a vehicle that has up-to-date vehicle registration, have an insurance card. They look at both of those. They look at your ID. Obey the posted speed limits. This is one rule that I thought was kind of weird, and they said it doesn't really happen, or maybe hasn't happened. I'm not sure. But be prepared to cover political bumper stickers on your vehicle with tape. That just seems to me that if that's really the case, even on a military base, we don't live in the USA anymore. But we didn't have any political bumper stickers, so that didn't come up.
Correct.
But there was no intimidation. Like I said, once we got on, nobody was following us. We got lost. We were driving all over the place. It was like being on the Stony Brook campus.
Yeah, it was totally pleasant. Just like you were any kind of visitor. Maybe you had a friend or family you're visiting for a barbecue. It was really super normal. I mean, it reminded me a lot of my experiences on base. And it just was good to be sort of... yeah, at ease, to be like, wow, that was a crazy thought.
Well, they said at ease to us.
Oh, funny. And, well, yeah. to be like concerned even about entering the base and whatnot. It's a totally normal base, and I think that was really instructive as well. For as much as is concerning about the Manning case, there are a lot of good people, a lot of good Americans on that base. And mm-hmm. even when we were out speaking during the vigil, there were people honking.
People entering the base honking in support.
Yes.
So, yeah, and keep in mind, Bradley Manning was and still is part of the military.
Yeah.
There are good people out there, and we need to encourage them, and you encourage them by showing up and simply voicing your support in whatever way you can. And that means being totally respectful inside a courtroom. There were no outbursts. There's no contentiousness.
Yeah.
That's very important. And that right away, it sets the mood, sets the tone.
I don't think any of that would help.
Absolutely not.
At all.
Absolutely not. And
Bradley, guess what?
He'd be the first person to say, don't do that.
Yeah, I don't think he would appreciate that at all. But just being there, being attentive, being awake and alert and paying attention to what's being said and thinking mm-hmm. very deeply while you're there, that's important. If you do anything, you're not going to be in there for very long.
Exactly.
It becomes very clear that this is sensitive to them. When you start to enter the court area, you get a good sense of the security that's going on.
They told us that Daniel Ellsberg was there, I think, for one of the pretrial hearings, and he tried to approach Bradley Manning in the court, and he found himself outside in about 5 seconds. And he's what, 85, that guy?
Yeah.
So you gotta just basically follow the rules even if you don't agree with them.
Yes.
If you want to witness this, and like I said, it's not hard to get. Even people who don't live in this country can go to the trial. You just have to enter with an ID of some sort. Non-U.S. passports are perfectly okay. And you can't really wear shirts or buttons that show support for Bradley Manning while you're on the base.
In
but people were wearing shirts that said truth on them.
Yes.
And there's nothing wrong with that. So
it's sort of a solidarity and a like-minded concept that they want to brandish. But you can't wear anything that actually has his name or photo or something. Mm-hmm. And I think, anyway, we've said it, but basically going onto the base and experiencing it, demonizing the base and the people there in general, I think, is unhelpful. And it ought not to be that you're afraid of the base or the people there living their lives, doing, you know, fighting for America, doing what they do.
These are people like us that are, have chosen a different path.
Even within the court area, I think both you and I agree that as tough and serious as the security guys were, they had the utmost respect for us,
absolutely,
for us being there.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, not even a feeling that they perhaps are judging you for being there or anything.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know what side you're on or what you think. And I think just being a citizen and showing a groundswell by having a presence or even the mass media, if they were petitioning and maybe working with the court, I think they could do a lot more production on site. But the need has to be there and people have to know what the situation is. And I was really thankful to have been able to go and experience it. And I have more thoughts about it. I'm still processing the experience.
Me
I'm
too.
Sure you are too.
Me too. We saw Bradley Manning in person.
In person. I heard him speak.
Yes, yes. There's no eye contact or anything like that because he's facing away most of the time. And he's part of the whole system. He's part of the military. He obeys the rules. He knows the rules. He's really as military as you can expect anyone to be in the military, standing at the right time and all the kinds of things that that they teach you.
And don't take this comment as too much of like opinion or being a critical thought, but you have got to imagine that he sees that judge and that courtroom as his lifeline.
Mm-hmm.
They have him so under control.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you cannot believe the amount of control. Every breath, every meal, every bit of sunlight, if he even sees it, is controlled by that courtroom mm-hmm. and going forward. And so that judge is like, I mean, I don't want to even say this, it's a bit Oedipal, but that she is like his mother.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he looks very much obediently on that courtroom and depends on it for hope and for life and for sanity.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually, as you said, he faces behind you. And in fact, there are people guarding the area. We didn't even realize he was sitting there
right.
until well into the proceedings when a couple of guys stepped away for the judge to enter. It was only through a matter of procedure where they were entering government side of the team's defense and plaintiff and defense. I don't know. Anyway, the government's team of lawyers were entering something that was classified. And for whatever reason, Bradley had to acknowledge or look at it. And my understanding is that he was oriented differently when we were in there for that particular document to be entered because it was classified and he had to look at it.
Yeah, it was all the way on the other side of the room facing, I think, a computer screen.
Facing a screen, and he was 90 degrees from us, so we were looking at him from the side. And that was through a bit of procedure that he had to approve and say he had read and understood this unredacted document, or the one that they were showing him was redacted, had he seen the unredacted one. It was only through that matter of procedure, very brief, that he was able to sit sideways mm-hmm. and perhaps even glance in
right.
his peripheral at the amount of people in that courtroom.
Right. But a whole lot about being in the military is not acknowledging certain things.
Yes.
Like if you're standing guard, you can't acknowledge people around you.
Yes.
He knows the rules. He obeys the rules. He respects the rules. That's something that people need to know when they think of the magnitude of what it was he did and why he felt that was of such a compelling nature that he risked his entire life doing this. And that's what makes being in attendance and paying attention is so important. So yeah, we need more people down there. We need more people of all ages down there. We need for people not to be afraid to show up. It was so simple for us to do this. I'm blown away by how simple it was. And yes, it was boring as hell when they were giving testimony. We actually didn't see any testimony. We basically saw the government reading statements from people who weren't even there.
Just more stuff they're entering.
Yeah, and it's just it was like watching paint peel. But I was able to keep from falling asleep entirely by just realizing where I was and what I was seeing. And that's something that you have to do if you want to actually play a part in where you move, where the society moves, what changes take place, and and what's important, what makes the news and what doesn't.
Yeah, and again, it would be interesting to see a bit more interest from the media, and in fact, getting them to coordinate and perhaps petition to get a little bit more access. Maybe some people speaking right outside the courtroom mm-hmm. on base, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I also just was very much engaged and attentive and listening, but I understand being sleepy. And you have to understand, also, think of us. Like, we're yes. doubly tired because we drove all the way there. Then you're in this courtroom where the stuff is dry and bland and just they're just piling on.
It was a test.
Boring,
it was a real, real.
Boring,
yeah.
You know, reading statements. I mean, it would be interesting if all three of those guys that were entered in whatever their statements, if they were there, it would have been interesting.
Why couldn't they be there? One was at Gitmo and one was, I think, over in Iraq or something. I don't know. They were all over the place.
It's like they just asked them to file reports and then they're just reading, you know, from the inbox or the hopper, you know, of things they're entering. It was so boring.
That's one difference, I think, that you don't see in civilian courts
yes.
is being able to do that. By the way, I want to give out our phone number in case people want to call in. And if we get a bunch of calls, we'll go into delay and take them. 631-632-6901, 631-632-6901. Kyle and I visited the Bradley Manning court-martial yesterday in Fort Meade, Maryland. I just found out, actually, that court is now in recess until next Tuesday. So they take these long breaks. Last couple of weeks, they only... went up to Wednesday. They took Thursday and Friday off, but it seems like they're now done until next Tuesday, a week from today.
Fantastic.
So if you're planning on going down there, don't go tomorrow, Thursday, Friday, or Monday. Go next Tuesday.
I guess they just they're just taking the week off. So were they in court today?
They were in court today. I think they must have been in court.
Okay.
You know, I was so tired when I got home, I didn't go and check the transcript to see just what happened.
But, okay.
The transcripts are available. They basically, there's no court stenographer taking notes. So somebody in one of the trailers has been hired by volunteers who raised a lot of money to pay people to do this because it's one hell of a job.
Yeah.
And what they're doing is making a transcript, which takes several hours to put together, but it's up every single day. If you go to bradleymanning.org, you can find out all kinds of information about how to attend, how to read the transcripts, things like that. So let's just talk about the base a little bit more because I found that so fascinating. It was my first time, I think, on a military base.
Sure.
You've been on one before.
Sure.
We wound up in a shopping center we were wandering. I've been in a shopping center on a military base before, so I guess I was on a base, but I didn't go through any kind of visitor thing. I just drove on. So maybe that was a period where you didn't have to show ID to be on the base.
It must be.
Yeah. But now they're, it might even be the same shopping center. It was like a department store. What was it called again?
Well, it's called, I kept seeing PX, and I want to say that's Post Exchange, but that could be totally wrong. I don't know what the P stands for. I know at Lewis McChord in Washington State, it's the BX, which is Base Exchange.
Is it P-X?
PX, just two letters, not dash.
Okay, I'm looking it up on the internet now to see if there's any record of it. Praxair is a company.
No, I learned how to spell court-martial today, too.
Yeah, why don't you tell us that little lesson? And
well, I kept thinking martial, like marshal, like federal marshal or something like that. But it was one of those spelling things that I was kicking myself.
Okay, I found a page called Base Exchange. A Base Exchange, BX, is U.S. Air Force terminology, also referred to as a Post Exchange, PX, or on Army Post. So that's what we were at.
Got it.
PX. Okay, I'm learning this right now.
Yes.
Navy Exchange. What's a Navy Exchange, Kyle? What's that called?
SX.
Why would it be SX for the Navy?
Naval Station?
I don't
know.
Base Exchange for U.S. Air Force is BX. I don't know why they're called a Base Exchange, not Air Force. Post Exchange, PX, Army Base. Okay. Navy Exchange, NEX. Okay, there's no rhyme or reason to this. There's no way you could have gotten that right. That's on Navy installations. Marine Corps Exchange, Kyle, what's that? Again, there's no way you can get
CX.
This right. Yeah, so MCX, so you're almost there. Coast Guard Exchange, why don't you give this one a try?
CGX.
That's right. But how do you know that? That one is logical, but yet you somehow guessed it. Okay. Anyway, it's a type of retail store operating on U.S. military installations worldwide. Worldwide. Originally akin to trading posts, they now resemble department stores or strip malls. Over the next few years, every exchange operated by the Army and Air Force Exchange Service will be rebranded simply as an exchange, X. to simplify differentiation between these similar sounding BX and PX names.
Or so they don't sound so stupid.
What kind of confusion could that have caused, really? I'll meet you at the PX, and someone thought they said BX, so they drive to an Air Force base instead of an Army base.
They probably all call it the Exchange.
That's what I would call it,
totally. I'm going to be at the Exchange. But that worldwide thing is no joke.
Yeah.
I know in, like, Iraq and some of these theaters where they were active, like, war was going on, they'll have weird businesses that coordinate through the Exchange program, and they're like, you know, Subway and Burger King in the middle of the desert or something.
Yeah. Well, these exchanges, they sell consumer goods and services to active duty, reserve, National Guard, retired members of the U.S. uniformed services and their dependents. And authority to use these facilities is normally determined by presentation of the individual's military member or military family member identification card, either when entering the store or when paying for things that you've bought. However, we were able to go in and go to a fast food joint.
Yeah, and they encourage that, actually, because you want, especially families that, you know, live on base, they want kids and, you know, people like to be able to bring their friends and go hang out, go have lunch. And there were signs up even encouraging people to not forget that anybody can, you know, have a meal here. And it was really cool just to go be a part of it. We did stick out a little bit, I think. Our haircuts and our clothing might have been different than what they're used to, and people in military uniforms or just civilian clothes alike, you know, depending on what part of the day they're at or what, you know, where they have to report next, all that kind of thing.
It seems like everybody has lunch at the same time, because
yes,
when we went there, there was a good 20-minute wait at each fast food place. And also all the people that were at the trial were showing up there. We intentionally, not to be unfriendly, but we intentionally didn't sit near the people that we were sitting near in the court. We wanted to sit in the middle of all the people with fatigues, just to like kind of listen to their conversation and feel like, hey, we're in a totally different place now. And
yes,
I think that was a cool thing to do.
It was cool. No, I'm really glad we did that, because we could have easily gotten into it with people from the trial and stuff like that. But we wanted to get that sense and be a part of it. And the other thing I want to say is that people were very unassuming about us. I mean,
yes,
there was no like sneering or judging or anything like that, you know, that we're clearly different. We're obviously there for, you know, other reasons. We're just a bit, you know, standing out a bit. We're not wearing uniforms, obviously, stuff like that. And I really felt like we weren't even being stared at or what. It was totally normal to have civilian people on base as well. And that really gave me the sense, you know, I've had family in the military, and the sense of belonging that, like, you know, this is, you know, our country, and I contribute to this, and I'm welcome here just like anybody else. That was really comforting. The other thing I wanted to say, though, about the trial is getting into it with people there. I didn't want to talk about that stuff. I wanted to participate. I wanted to do my own thing. I don't think it's exactly the right time and place to start getting into these protracted discussions, especially at lunchtime where a bunch of people who live there might be overhearing you.
Yeah, no, absolutely. There's all kinds of time to talk about all these issues at great length, but here we are in a particular scenario. Let's observe it. Let's learn from it. Let's take notes for the people that aren't there, so that they understand what it is that that's going on in this particular place. And it certainly is fascinating watching and just kind of sitting back and seeing what happens as a normal day progresses on one of these bases.
Yeah.
And I guess you can visit a base for other reasons, too. I mean, they didn't check to make sure that we went to the trial. They simply said, okay, you know, when we drove the car up, they asked us to pop the trunk. They opened the trunk and closed it immediately. They didn't even look at it very closely.
You opened it prematurely. I don't think they wanted to open or see anything.
Oh, it's said on the instructions.
Yeah, are there, but they're like half that stuff they didn't do.
I was supposed to open my hood, too, but they didn't even care about that.
They didn't look at anything.
But they do look under your car, and they look inside. At one point, he asked, do you have any T-shirts or something else? Buttons, I think. And
yeah,
I said no, but of course, you know, we did have what we were wearing.
Shirts.
I didn't want to be a jerk about it, but
no, I just wear button ups.
I think he meant you have any T-shirts that would loudly proclaim that.
It was a friendly reminder.
Yeah, yeah,
pretty low key.
And that was after I told him that we were going to the trial. But I wonder what else can you tell them so that you can visit the base? Because obviously, visiting the base is not that big a deal. And I wouldn't mind visiting other bases to see what they're like.
Yeah, often there's museums. That's a good reason. I don't know. We could probably think of a lot of good reasons.
There was a museum there. I saw a museum.
Yep.
It's not the Cryptology Museum. That's part of the NSA. But there was a museum on the base.
Sure.
There's also a theater. They were showing movies, yep, only $4.
Yeah, the movie prices were pretty good, although I imagine you have to have a military ID for that.
So. Or be the date of one of the military people, so there's that to consider. But all kinds of things, huge. Like I said, as big as the Steinberg campus, if not bigger. So that was it. More information on how to attend, bradleymanning.org. We'll talk more about this tomorrow on Off the Hook as well, because it really is an important thing that people need to participate in. That isn't all we've done in the last week, Kyle. We did something else, which was pretty momentous. I can't believe it's the same week. But we pack a lot into a single week. What
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I'm talking about exactly what you think I'm talking about. Why don't you let the folks in?
That was amazing. This is something I had wanted to do. I've been talking about it at my hackerspace. I've been talking about it with you a bunch. And it's a really simple thing, but I've got all kinds of, you know, different things. I was a bartender once. You take classes for different things. So this one is really important. And my food handler's permit, you know, different licenses, they've expired. Well, one of them was, for first aid and CPR. And I've been talking about this for a while because it expired, years ago now. And it was actually even more important because some things have changed with CPR. So I signed us up and we went and got certified.
We sure did. We went to a local ambulance corps, which is kind of like a fire department. And took a four-hour course. And I got to say, you've done this before, or you've done something similar to this before. I was kind of scared because we went in there. And that again, is also a different environment. I've never actually been inside a fire department or an ambulance corps. So the people are there, and they hand out the syllabus. And it just looked really, really hard. It looked like a lot of things you had to remember. I never did well in school. I'm bad at being asked questions and asked to recite things upon demand. So I was wondering, what happens if I don't pass? How ashamed am I going to be for the rest of my life and in your eyes for not being able to do this basic thing? But then, you know, once they started, everyone is assigned a dummy, you know, an actual mannequin.
Its name's thing. Annie, actually.
Is it? Okay, fine. So you basically you learn chest compressions, and unlike a human, when you press down, it clicks. When you press down the right amount of
depth,
thank you. 2 inches is what it's supposed to be. And you basically learn the speed that you're supposed to do that. You learn certain things. You learned a lot about this. What has changed?
Yes.
Every 5 years, apparently, they change the rules as they learn more.
Worldwide.
There used to be something called the ABC system. And what did that mean, ABC?
Airway, breathing, and compressions.
Okay, that was the order you're supposed to do things in when somebody was in distress. And that's gone out the window now. That's not the way you're supposed to do it anymore.
And I can attest, ABC was not simple.
Mm-hmm.
Puns that you go on with that. But
yeah.
It was a lot of, you do a couple things that are similar.
Right.
Like tapping the person, alerting them, and checking their carotid artery.
Well, fortunately, you don't have to say it.
check the artery, check their pulse.
Right. Make sure they don't have a pulse.
Make sure they check their pulse for at least 5 seconds, no longer than 10.
Mm-hmm.
And with CAB, you immediately begin.
Whoa, you jumped ahead. CAB, they changed the order. It was ABC, now it's CAB.
I'm sorry. Yeah. There I go. Telling
you ruined the whole thing.
I always
CAB.
All right.
So
that
means.
So I learned ABC, and it was unduly complicated. And basically, after you check the artery, you were to check the airway for obstructions. So have they been choking on something?
Mm-hmm.
These kinds of things.
But this is after doing the compressions.
It also involved a finger swipe.
Right.
Of their mouth if there is stuff in there to block. And then you check for breathing, which involves putting your ear down by their nose. All of that takes time. So in 2010, they changed the order and came up with?
CAB. Yes.
Which
compressions first.
Compressions, airway, and breathing.
And they frown on mouth-to-mouth now.
Yeah, mouth-to-mouth out the window, too, because basically, if you're doing compressions 2 inches on someone's chest, I think the idea is that a little bit of airflow is going to occur as a result of that. And really, if they don't have a pulse, compressions are a lot more important at that point.
So they showed us this film, and we went along with the film and did our own exercises and things like that. And basically, we learned that right away, as you said, you check to see if the person is in distress, if there's no pulse, and you immediately start compressions. You have to do this very, very quickly. Unresponsive.
Yes.
Yeah. not just sulking, unresponsive. And you do these compressions at a depth of 2 inches. Basically, I wouldn't worry about that so much. Just make sure that they're it's strong. It's strong.
Firm.
Enough. Yeah.
Pressing down.
And you do it at a rate of what? How many a minute?
100 per minute.
100 per minute. So that's just a little more than 1 a second. It's like 1.5 a second. So
yeah.
You go pretty, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, like that.
Very quickly.
You
yeah.
do about 30 of those, and then you you do 2 breaths. Now, basically, if we have what's called a mask of some sort?
Pocket mask.
Pocket mask. These are things that that you put over somebody's face so that you can breathe into, using a tube, into their mouth.
Yeah, it's got a one-way valve.
And what you do is, after the 30 compressions, you do 2 of those breaths. You breathe in once, see the chest rise up, wait for the chest to go down,
yeah.
right? And then you do it again.
Or
and then right after that, you do another 30, and you repeat that procedure.
Absolutely.
Right. Now, we went to a local drugstore, and we tried to get one of these masks. They don't sell the masks. They said, hey, you got to go to the surgical supply store for that. The only purpose I can think of for a surgical supply store is for surgeons. And we're not surgeons. We're people. Well, they're people, too. But you know what I mean? It's basically it's a drugstore where you're supposed to buy healthy type things, health aid things, and they don't sell that. And yeah. I asked the guy, do you sell cigarettes? Yeah. And beer? Okay. But not that. And I think I made my point.
Yeah. They had an entire aisle of first aid stuff, but not anything related to like CPR, not even disposable pocket masks. And, you know, for something that serious, for something that happens all the time,
yeah,
to not stock pocket masks, so this is a bit alarming. But it was a really good idea, and I'm really glad we did it. Had a lot of good information, new information, and we also learned some really interesting stuff.
I think, and we're out of time now, unfortunately, because we could talk about this for longer, too. I think this is the kind of thing that everybody should learn in school. It's not something to be afraid of. It's something that you'll take with you for the rest of your life. And I also think another way to get this out to people is to simply air this on TV, air the kind of film that we saw so that, you know, we all see infomercials on TV. We all can quote infomercials, things that we would never consider buying in the first place, yet we somehow know what's said in them because they're on all the time. Well, how about putting on a half-hour program a lot so that everybody remembers this too. Everybody memorizes the various steps so that we don't have to be told 100 compressions a minute. We don't have to be told how to hold your hand when you press down on someone's chest to save their life. It'd be a great thing for everybody to just know.
And where. And we did, in fact, learn that there's a school. Schools in Washington State are actually now requiring this for graduation. And also out here, they're trying to get people together to do it locally on Long Island and in New York State in general, I think.
Okay. Kyle, it's been a pleasure as always. We must say goodnight for tonight.
Good night.
But you can write to us, otw@2600.com. And tell us what you think about the various things we've discussed tonight. And remember to go to bradleymanning.org for more information on how to attend the court martial.
The court martial.
All right. Until next time, have a good night. Kyle, the CD player, it's not responsive. Quickly. Okay, we have to.
Marshall spelled.
No, quickly. Come over here. What do you do when something's in distress? First thing you do is quickly.
Tap it to see if it's responsive.
It's not responsive, Kyle. What do we do now? Compressions?
Check for a pull. Compressions.
Okay, you do compressions.
Okay, on the play button.
Count.
Okay, 1, 2.
Faster,
three,
faster.
4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18. 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30. All right, tilt the chin, two breaths. Two breaths.
Oh, God, it's heavy. Okay.
All right, compressions.
Again.
1, 2, 3, 4.
All right, we got breath. We got breath. Thank you, Kyle. All right, sorry about that. The CD machines here are very often not responsive. Good work, Kyle. Good work under pressure.
Thank you.
All right. Well, remember that, folks. It works on all kinds of equipment as well as human beings. We'll see you next week. Good night.